Hi, this is Leslie Garfield-Tenzer. Well, we're back. Starting August 31st, Legal Tenzer will have all new episodes. And the good news is that they will remain available for many, many months. In the meantime, we will bring back some of our old episodes for you to listen to. Here's an episode with Jonathan Choi on artificial intelligence. Spoiler alert, he suggests you embrace it. And as always, if you like our podcast, please subscribe, rate us, and all that other good stuff. And if you have any topics you would like us to speak about or professors with whom you'd like us to talk to, email us at legaltenzer@westacademic.com. Enjoy this episode. Hello, I'm Leslie Garfield-Tenzer, and this is Legal Tenzer, casual conversations on newsworthy legal topics. Artificial intelligence, or AI as it's more commonly known, has been a hot topic in the legal profession. Large language models, LLMs, such as ChatGPT, Bing Chat, and Bard are poised to revolutionize both learning and the practice of law. Today's guest, Jonathan H. Choi, the Solly Robbins Faculty Research Scholar, McKnight Land Grant Professor, and Associate Professor of Law at the University of Minnesota Law School, has written extensively in this area and joins me to discuss both the benefits and the burdens of AI for lawyers and law students. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, Leslie. Lovely to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you. You know, I'm going to jump into the middle of the conversation because it just seems to me, I've read your work, and a lot of what you do is you help people understand how to formalize chat prompts to get the information that you need, right? But I still think that you can't even formalize those prompts unless you understand how to think like a lawyer and reason like a lawyer. So I don't know. I don't think we could ever be replaced. So I'm wondering what your feeling is in terms of how much AI can replace us, given that, and do you agree with me that you need that foundation of understanding how to think like a lawyer before you can even use it?
Right now, I absolutely agree. So right now, there's no question. It would be severe malpractice if anybody tried to use ChatGPT, GPT-4, Bing Chat, any of these models to replace the activities of a lawyer start to finish. Or even if they attempted to use these models to take on a significant chunk of the work that lawyers currently do, their reliability is just not there. I think that would be a bad decision. However, there are a lot of legal tasks that these models really excel at: summarizing long cases, doing basic first drafts. And in that way, I think they can do a really good job of complementing the work that a lawyer already does, making that work more efficient, and saving time and money for clients. So I think there's a lot of potential, even right now when the tools are far from perfect, to use them in legal practice.
So, but and I'm just going to push back a little bit, but I'm speaking more as a professor than a practicing attorney. Summarizing cases robs the reader of the ability to truly understand the whole analytical thread of a case. And that's troublesome to me.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a kind of Karate Kid argument here that you can't, you should spend some time like waxing the car, and then eventually you become a karate master. You know, you don't have to do the specific task that you would be doing in practice. Maybe you should be doing something else in law school. So, for example, practicing lawyers don't necessarily have the time to go through Socratic dialogues, you know, write all of these memos from scratch, all sorts of things that we do in law school. A practicing lawyer might start with a contract that they used a week ago. They might read Westlaw headnotes rather than reading through the entire case in order to extract the relevant law. And that's just, you know, there's an ethical obligation to provide services to clients at reasonable costs. So the question is, pedagogically, do you need to go through the process of reading the full case, of writing the contract from scratch in order to understand the principles at play? Maybe. I think there's definitely a pedagogical argument to be made there. I would say that it's not clear to me that in a world where we act as editors rather than writers of first drafts, that you need to have that experience writing a first draft. So if the skill for lawyers becomes one of discernment and judgment and the ability to edit rather than the ability to draft from scratch, I think, you know, a lot of, say, readers of fiction have the ability to discern good fiction from bad fiction, even if they've never written fiction themselves. And if a model spit out two versions of fiction, work of fiction, that people might be able to say which one is better. And similarly, if a model spat out two versions of a contract, you might be able to say which one is better, even if you had never drafted a contract yourself. Maybe.
Yeah, well, no, you're right. And I'm going to kind of reveal that I actually have used ChatGPT to try and write a law school exam. And I know you wrote about writing law school exams and taking law school exams, but it did help. But it gave me the foundation. And that's, I guess, the point you're making is that it's not going to replace us, but it's going to save us time by getting us started. Is that fair to say?
Exactly. So if you think about the work that a lawyer at a law firm does, the march of technology has largely allowed us to automate the kind of lower level work, the work that you do in your junior years as a law firm lawyer. So, you know, it used to be way back in the day that we had scriveners working at law firms, and we don't have scriveners anymore because we have computers for that. And it may be that the work that junior associates do now, the discovery, the due diligence, the drafting of the contracts to adapt, you know, that first draft from a prior contract, that will now be done by the large language models. And what's left is the work that partners do. You know, the reason that lawyers really get paid the big bucks, that legal judgment, the ability to make tough decisions that requires more than simple legal analysis.
But that brings me back to my first question. I have so many, I'm sorry, but of this idea of how do we teach legal judgment in an AI world? Because you have to learn how to make legal, you have to learn legal judgment, right, before you go out and practice it. So how do we teach that, given that AI exists?
I'm not sure that we've ever taught legal judgment. You know, if you ask about the skills that are required to give clients good counsel, I'm not sure that we've ever taught that. I think to some extent, it's always been acknowledged that law schools are somewhat divorced from the real world. Now, I think it's incumbent on law schools to try and prepare students as best they can for an actual professional life. But I learned almost nothing in law school that was actually relevant to my time in practice. That said, you know, what should we try and do in response to these tools? I think it would be a smart, responsible choice to try and adapt course materials to the actual challenges that students will face in practice. So what does that entail? Maybe it entails having an assignment where you start with a draft produced by ChatGPT or one of these models, and you try and improve upon that draft, and you're being judged and graded not on your ability to draft from scratch, but your ability to edit. Maybe something like that is what law schools should move toward. I'm told that there are law schools in Sweden that are doing this already.
Yeah. Do you do that in your classes?
I don't. So I still teach corporate tax, and I teach basically large lecture classes.
And yeah, so you can't get assignments.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went to law school, you know, way before you did. But one of the criticisms of law school, to your point, is that it has not changed from the Langdalian model. Like, do you think this is just a prediction on your part? But do you think that AI may be the thing that moves the needle toward a more realistic relationship between law school and practice?
Oh, great. I've done dozens of these interviews. No one has ever asked me this before. I think there's a huge opportunity for us to revolutionize the way that teaching happens in law school by involving large language models in the teaching process. So Khan Academy, for example, is already doing this for much simpler topics. You know, it's like first grade multiplication. But there are AI models that are explicitly trained to be teachers. And so, you know, you will try and answer a question about the tax code, and the model will identify the error that you made, explain the error, and try and steer you toward the correct answer. Mm-hmm. Something like that could serve essentially as a low-cost TA in these courses and allow students to get fast, real-time feedback on their performance and then improve their pedagogical outcomes in that way. I think there's a huge opportunity for that. I think there's a huge opportunity to make it easier to grade assignments and provide students with that kind of real-time feedback, which, you know, I think given the current technology, we would still want professors to be involved in. But if suddenly it becomes 10 times cheaper and less time consuming for a professor to grade an assignment, can we then have 10 times more assignments? I think that would be of incredible value to students.
That I agree with. But I'm trying to envision how AI would grade a paper.
Okay, so just to provide a grade, I think would be relatively straightforward. I think with appropriate
I should say analyze, not just give it an A, B.
So it's a difficult problem. But if it were trained on a sufficiently large data set of past feedback that were provided on papers, I think it's very tractable. I've actually considered doing this myself. And who knows? In the next 2 years, I may come out with a product that does this. But I think it's not.
I want in.
it's the big opportunity for educators to use this technology,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's a ton of potential there. And I mean, you know, to the point that you started out with, like if we start using these tools to help educators impart knowledge more effectively, how does that interact with what students should be learning? I think students should be learning less rote knowledge and more critical thinking, analysis, legal judgment to the extent we can teach it. Right now, because it's so difficult to grade exams, we still, to a significant extent, just test knowledge recall. So, you know, multiple choice questions are famously the easiest questions to administer on your exams. And the easiest thing to have in a multiple choice question is some sort of doctrinal question about, you know, what was the content of the case?
People do. I mean, that's one of the things I try to tell my 1Ls and people who are thinking about going to law school is we don't ask questions like that. Like our multiple choice questions are just hypotheticals. I mean, I don't think we say, is homicide A, B, C, or D? We'll say, you know, Bill saw, you know, John and stabbed him 150 times. Is that intentional homicide? You know, you have to reason through it.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, I guess it depends on the multiple choice questions you're talking about. Like take the bar exam, for example. Yeah. The bar exam is largely knowledge recall.
Yeah, but I'm pushing back. I'm sorry. I think it's based on hypos, though, mostly. I mean, the you know, those MBE questions are pretty hypo-oriented, hypothetical.
Okay, well, then maybe we're talking about the same thing, but using different language. So I think of something where you have a simple hypo and you don't have very in-depth analysis, and you have a multiple choice question as largely testing knowledge recall. And, you know, if the question is, what are large language models good at answering? They're very good at answering those questions. You may have seen this result that 90th percentile on the bar exam. So, you know, if simple hypos, simple knowledge can be easily addressed by machines, what's really left for humans is like the more complex scenarios. It's spotting issues from scratch. It's that kind of critical thinking that I think as of right now, large language models are not as good at. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that we want to teach humans, teach our law students to specialize in the tasks that they alone are best at, I think it would behoove us to move away from those sorts of questions. And I think we may soon have the tools to do so because of developments in pedagogy through large language models.
So one of the reasons I love doing my podcast is I get to learn so much. I'm not that, I have used, you know, ChatGPT, but... Yeah. I guess what I'm learning from you is that AI is developed by repeatedly being exposed to certain patterns and information and just the, you know, it's almost like a human, right? The more information they acquire, the more sophisticated they are in what they can produce. Is that fair to say?
There are a lot of analogs in the way these models are trained and in the way that young children especially learn. So basically, it ingests a massive amount of data, you know, the entirety of the publicly accessible internet, books, magazines, all sorts of materials, including lots of legal materials, you know, like asklaw.com. I don't know if it's a real website, but all sorts of like legal websites and statutes and all of that. And then based on that, you know, the underlying model is that it tries to predict the next token. It tries to predict the next word in a sentence, and then it can compose whole paragraphs in that way. And then also it's fine-tuned in order to be truthful, accurate, cautious, non-offensive, all of that kind of thing. The net result of this is that you start with this next token prediction model, and people sometimes criticize this as being unable to produce original thoughts, but then fine-tuning in order to be more accurate means that we really have no idea what's going on under the hood. So these models are largely black boxes, and we can analogize to, you know, like learning by doing, attempting to predict the next word, but like because of the complex way that these models are now trained, we don't really know what's going on. And so perhaps the best way to judge them is on the outputs.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I really appreciated in your article is how you refined your search after each time they, you know, after each information, which leads me to another question. Let's give some value added to listeners. Yes. What advice would you give to law students on how to effectively use AI to help them with their academic career?
Well, first of all, they should make sure that they're allowed to do so with the constraints of the class. I know a lot of law schools are moving to prohibitions of these tools by default, which is only natural. I mean, people need time to adapt. And also there is a concern that if we allow students to use these tools, that'll be a shortcut and they'll never learn basic lawyering skills that they otherwise would need. So those are both valid concerns. That said, I think students could use these tools in a huge variety of situations. Just to mention, you know, some of the things that I use the tools for in my daily life, you can use them for meal planning. You can use them to produce first drafts of paperwork that is relatively low stakes and which you can edit before you send out. You can use them to draft emails. You can use them to do a variety of administrative tasks, essentially. And then when it comes to legal research and writing, you could use the AI tools to produce that first spark of inspiration. So let's say that you want to make an argument in a brief. You can ask the AI to brainstorm arguments that you could make, maybe ask it to spit out 15 arguments. You can pick the best arguments and ask it to iteratively improve by, you know, focusing on those arguments, elaborate with more detail, give some examples from case law that might be relevant. Then you can go look up those cases, maybe feed those cases into the model, ask it to identify some choice quotes. This is all part of the process that can make legal research and writing much more efficient and can help you brainstorm ideas that you might otherwise not have had.
Yeah, that is a great tool. And that brings me to the other question I have to ask, which is the ethical consideration. You spend a lot of time in your article talking about it, but let's say I use AI to brainstorm for my appellate ad paper. Yes. I'm not going to know, am I going to know or am I not going to know what pieces of the information I get that literally came from, say, a case or someone else's article? So I guess I worry about the plagiarism implication of this.
That's a terrific point. You could ask the model whether similar language occurs somewhere out there in its training corpus.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it would always give you a truthful answer. That's a significant concern. It has been shown that these models will sometimes simply regurgitate text that is in their training data set. So you're absolutely right. If plagiarism is a concern, which it is with, you know, academic writing, I wouldn't use these models even to provide text that I then edit. And frankly, I've tried using it for academic writing. It's just not that good. It produces below average quality writing for a lawyer under the status quo, I would say. It's relatively flat, relatively generic. So, you know, to use it to summarize articles and to give you information that then you can check on your own is one thing. To use it to brainstorm is another thing. To use it to actually write your brief, I don't think we're there yet.
Actually, summarizing is a great idea, because if you read it to summarize it, that's going to tell you whether it's worth investing your time to read the whole article. You know, I banned laptops pre-pandemic I wouldn't allow laptops in my class because I felt that it made students stenographers and ripped them. It took away their opportunity to actually just learn. But I feel quite the opposite about AI. I am embracing it because I think that to not recognize it and embrace it is just, it's almost like not allowing, here's my analogy of the day, not allowing your child to have candy. The minute they can find candy, they eat too much of it. But if you allow them to have it from the beginning, they know how to moderate. That is my theory of the day.
Well, I don't allow my child to eat candy. But I don't allow my students to use these tools in class. I don't have any prohibitions on that. And, you know, you can imagine it being useful in class if a student has a question, they're too embarrassed to ask it, they're afraid it's a silly question. They ask it of GPT, or they ask it of Bing Chat, which allows it to, which actually will back up its claims with sources so they can check to make sure that it's all true. I think that has the potential to be useful in a pedagogical setting.
Which one do you prefer of all the different chat options? Which one do you prefer?
Definitely depends on what you're doing. If I were doing legal research where I wanted a source, I would use Bing Chat in my day-to-day life. And I do a lot of coding for my empirical research, computer code. I use GPT-4 most often.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Anything else you want to add to the conversation? This is so interesting. Anything else that you think is important for listeners to know?
No, these are great questions. I really appreciate your taking the time.
Thank you so much, too. I think it's been really informative. I'm going to put links to your articles in the liner notes. And thank you again for taking the time to chat with me.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So there you have it. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, or a professor or attorney with whom you'd like me to speak, send us an email at legaltensor@westacademic.com and send us any suggestions you may have. We love getting feedback. Have a great day.